Well, don't we have an exciting subject on the tip of our tongue today? Some might say that we are, the sweetest people on the planet, Anna.
Really?
I'm not sure that we're, necessarily that sweet, are we? But sugar is what most people would probably choose over me and you,
Yeah,
let's be
I
honest.
think you're quite right there, but sugar is my middle name.
Look, this is a podcast where we do get to get a little bit geeky. We discuss sugars. We look at all kinds of aspects about the sugar and what role it plays and how, if you are like me, who is taken over by the sugar monster, how on earth can you get that sugar monster back down in its cage and under control?
I'm just listening to and thinking about how I can shut Delilah down. She's my inner monster. It's an interesting thing that sugar gets in things that you never even thought it possibly could.
So let's delve into this subject of sugar. We've got someone who knows a little bit about it. Well, let's face it, a bit more than we know anyway, who's going to help us uncover what you need to know about sugar. But in the meantime, as we always do on this beautiful, wonderful podcast, we are going to
Cue
cue the
the ukulele.
ukuleles. So welcome to the Slimming World podcast. We are officially sponsored by Slimming World, but at the very heart of it, we are essentially two slightly mad people who are following Slimming World and been doing this podcast for, 3 years. I am a mere member. Anna is actually a consultant of nearly 11 years, so she should know what she's talking about.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah. But what we do add here is that, look, these are our kind of personal stories. You are getting to witness our kind of learning journeys and experiences. So what we find works for us might not work for you. Be open to the finding whatever is right for you, whether that be Slimming World. Make sure you get the support that you need as well. So in this podcast, Anna, we get to really think about something that both of us have kind of grappled with in years over our weight loss journeys. And together we've lost nearly 10 stone, but we've done it still eating sugary things. So it doesn't mean that you have to remove it completely, does it?
No, but I think we've made some massive lifestyle changes around sugar. We've had to. There is no way I could have lost weight and eaten sugar in the way I previously did. Do you know what I mean?
No way.
I wouldn't have lost a gram if I'd stayed eating those chocolate bars. But I found that sugar was something that punctuated my day in not a very pleasant way in the end. It was such a big part of my life that it was almost quite controlling.
And if we're honest with you, perhaps this might be one of the first times you're listening to this podcast. This is something like, we've done Slimming World a few times. It's not our first rodeo, we'll be quite honest with you. And it
No.
took a few times for it to really stick. And now we're kind of using this podcast as a bit of an oral journeying of how we kind of look more into the psychological aspects of losing weight and sugar cravings, withdrawal symptoms, the psychology behind that is really, really fascinating. Sugar is obviously a bit of a minefield, if we're honest, and a lot of us learn about how to food optimize and what goes on behind the plan. But sometimes we're not always clued in with, well, how did the team at Slimming World get there? What is actually happening in the world of dietitians and nutrition? And someone that we've got in as a guest this week can certainly help us kind of muddle through. We've got a few of our questions, a few of our myths that we want to find out, and we hope that these are questions that are relevant to you who are listening too. But let us introduce our guests. So Amanda Avery, Associate Professor in Nutrition and Dietetics at the University of Nottingham. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Yes, I do indeed work at the University of Nottingham. I'm a dietitian by background. But over the years, I have done quite a lot of work in partnership with Slimming World, as part of their nutrition and research team.
And Amanda, you have obviously got experience of how food optimizing works, but also in the academia side, which is why this is brilliant, because I think you can help us kind of just, there's a many of us who like to sometimes dip into, well, I fall into Claire's world, where I like to challenge the planner. You know, I get a bit cheeky. So I think when we kind of start to understand why food optimizing is the way it is always interesting. I mean, let's just start with the opening question, okay? Sugar addict here. My name is Claire Freeman and I am a sugar addict. Anna has also got her hand up. You know, it's something I've struggled with before I was with Slimming World, whilst I've been on my weight loss journey. But question number one, is sugar bad for you?
It's such an amazing question, that is. And it's a question that's been asked for many years. I remember as a student all these years ago reading a book titled Pure, White and Deadly. So in the 1970s, there was such a book title where sugar was effectively being demonized as the culprit for all of our ill health. I actually don't think there's such a thing as a good or a bad food. It's your overall diet that is so important. And that's really why food optimizing can be really helpful to people in terms of their weight loss journey, because food optimizing allows, of course, flexibility, so that even if people do like some sugar in their diet, they can still have some sugar in their diet. And certainly as a dietitian, I still have some sugar in my diet. And I'm, you know, I don't find that difficult to say. We have to eat something and you still want to be able to enjoy your food as well. And enjoyment of food is very, very important, whether you're trying to lose weight or not. And whether sugar is worse for you than fat would be a very, very long debate.
That might be another podcast, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's a really interesting debate. But of course, what we've seen over the years is when food manufacturers have tried to reduce one thing in a food, so let's say they've tried to reduce the amount of fat in either a biscuit or a fruit-flavoured yoghurt, then what they have done previously is actually increase the amount of sugar in that product. Sugar is a relatively easy food for manufacturers to be able to add to foods. You know, it's a quick win. It's been a quick win over the years for food manufacturers to add sugar to their to different food products. And they've, of course, labelled foods as being low in fat. They've labelled them in such a way that people think that they're good for them to choose.
Yeah, you kind of say that because, like, Anna, sometimes people can get confused, can't they? Like, with the sugars, say, in fruits, you know, when we kind of first joined Slimming World, people who might be used to, I remember I would think that I was having five fruits a day by having a smoothie with five different types of fruit blended. But obviously, like, the way the plan works, like, when you're kind of working as a consultant, Anna, is that it kind of makes people recognize the different kind of sugars that there are.
I think the fundamental basis of the plan is about you having the unlimited amounts of free food, which are, you know, exceptionally filling and low in calories to give you the best possible weight loss. And fruit and vegetables that are sweet fall into that, don't they? But they're natural sugars that, and tell me if I'm wrong, Amanda, that don't necessarily spike the appetite in the way that, you know, I don't know how refined sugar does. So it's almost like what I think about is if I want something sweet, I go for the fruit first because it gives me a natural sweet hit that doesn't then make me crave more of it. You know, if I have a bar of chocolate, I want three bars. But if I have a really sweet apple, I don't want another three apples. So, you know, there is a difference in the sugars, isn't there? If I'm right, Amanda, the fruit sugars that are naturally occurring.
Yes, no, indeed. And in some respects, food optimizing was actually ahead of the game. So food optimizing had, you know, this concept within its plan before some of the sort of government's sort of recommendations came into play, because I mean, I don't want to get too complicated, but you're quite right, Anna, that the sugar that's contained within the fruit brilliant. And obviously fruit has so many other different nutrients that are so important to our health as well. But as soon as you start adding sugar to food, and there's two different terms, and I'm just going to refer to added sugar. We're also referring to free sugars in our diet, but there's only a small difference. And I don't want people to get confused with their good free foods. So can I just refer to added sugars? But essentially, added sugars and free sugars, they're the ones that have sort of been removed from outside of their normal structure. So exactly, as soon as you start blending fruits down or juicing fruits, then all of those natural fruit sugars, they're no longer sort of integral to that fruit. So they are much more rapidly absorbed into our blood system and do cause sort of various different metabolic effects, which are not as healthy as having that sugar in the fruit intact. So much better to choose a piece of fruit from the fruit bowl rather than putting it in a blender.
So with it, when it comes to kind of like, I don't know, recommended figures, you know, about how much sugar we should actually have, is there anything that you can kind of give us a bit of context? Because I have to say, when I started doing just my, you know, little Google-a-thon, which is obviously not necessarily that academic, looking at things like in cider, we know it's quite sugary, but 6 teaspoons of sugar in a pint of cider, you know, 1 teaspoon in tomato ketchup. I mean, we know now there are ways that we can pick products like, say, tomato ketchup, which has reduced sugar. But I mean, like, what are the kind of suggested figures that we should even be looking for?
Yeah, no, it's quite scary because the latest sort of government advice is that for an adult, we should be ideally trying to consume no more than 7 teaspoons of sugar per day, which is roughly around 5% of our energy intake. However, the vast majority of us are consuming at least twice that amount currently. So it is quite a drastic reduction that our government are sort of encouraging. But 7 teaspoons, and like you've identified, particularly in some drinks, so in terms of non-alcoholic drinks, your average can of non-diet Coke, for example, as a fizzy drink, that can contain anywhere up to sort of 8 teaspoons of sugar. Some of your average chocolate bars will contain at least sort of 7 to 8 teaspoons of sugar. So it's very, very easy just in one single serving to have above the recommended amount. The other examples, I guess your fruit flavoured yogurt that contains added sugar, you might be talking of 3 to 4 teaspoons of sugar. So manufacturers do add sugar to a variety of different products. Some of your ready prepared jarred sauces, again, quite high in their sugar content. And perhaps we wouldn't perceive that a savoury sauce in a jar would contain sugar, but many do. And the other difficulty for most consumers is that actually sugar comes in lots of disguises in terms of the names that can be used on the ingredient list. So you get glucose, fructose, dextrose, maltodextrin, corn syrups, etc., etc. So it's really, really difficult for the average person to be able to sort of see on a label just exactly how much sugars are contained, particularly with the sort of the different namings of sugars. But yes, it's really hard to get to that 7 teaspoons unless you are perhaps a Slimming World member.
Yeah,
I was just going to ask you that, like, in my mind, food optimizing, it must naturally be taking your sugar consumption down quite rapidly because of the free food not containing very much virtually no sugar, and then your healthy exercise and your sins being such a small part of the plan. So naturally, as someone trying to lose weight by food optimizing, that's going to be coming down, would you say?
Oh, definitely. And we have done a little bit of research looking at Slimming World members' sugar intake and if they meet the recommendations. There's a couple of scientific publications over recent years. And indeed, our members are doing much better than the average person in the population in terms of being closer to meeting the recommendations, which, as I said, you know, they're tough recommendations to meet. So it's brilliant that that people who are following food optimizing are getting towards the recommended amount of sugar. And the other brilliant thing about food optimizing, the sort of encouragement that people like yourself, Anna, give members, is to try and have a little bit more confidence in their own cooking and prepare more foods from scratch. And of course, in that way, you're in more greater control of what you put in your food. And as I said, food manufacturers do tend to put sugar quite easily into foods where perhaps if we were preparing from scratch at home, we wouldn't be using any sugar. So both of those elements, your free foods, your healthy extras, your sins, that really helps members to reduce the amount of sugar in their diet, and also the element of encouraging people to prepare more of their own sort of foods from scratch. Both really, really good ways of achieving sort of the sugar recommendations.
Good to know.
I mean, see, I think like with the food optimizing aspect, I don't know whether Anna is the same. Both of us are, you know, not Michelin star chefs by any means. Her face. Yeah, no. I've seen your Instagram dinners. I've seen them. But the thing that I suppose I went from before Slimming World, like kind of eating a lot of takeaways, you know, getting the jars and making pasta bakes using those. And I didn't ever really have the confidence to learn how to cook from scratch before. I'd never followed cookbooks or recipes really online. And so to kind of go straight into the deep end, I suppose, of like cooking from scratch was almost quite intimidating.
What always helps me when I meet new members is to try and explain with things like sugar or fat that, you know, it's not about making habit changes overnight. This is going to be a slow and steady thing. And if you're like someone like Claire and I, when we joined, takeaways, sugar and all of those, I don't know if you'd agree, but I found like a sugar withdrawal was quite hard because, you know, I was eating 16 chocolate bars a day at my biggest very, very easily. To go cold turkey overnight was going to be something that was going to be very difficult physically and emotionally. Is there a withdrawal from like sugar if you came off it? Is that a physical thing?
Well, it's such a controversial area. It's a bit like the sugar addiction. Is there such a thing? But, you know, that with any sort of behaviour change, I think we need to respect that gradual changes are much more likely to be effective for most people. And for most people, sort of gradually cutting down on something is likely to be the more sustainable way of making those long-term changes. And as we know, with the Slimming World approach, there's a lot about the psychology. And generally speaking, as soon as you tell somebody that they can't have something, then what do? They want that food even more. You kind of rebel, don't you? As you know, if somebody tells you you can't ever have a chocolate bar ever again, well, what's the first thing you're going to be thinking about? It's likely to be having the chocolate bar discreetly when nobody knows about you having a chocolate bar, which is not helpful to anybody, and certainly not for the person themselves. So much, much better for somebody to gradually wean themselves off having so many chocolate bars. Anna, sorry, can I use yourself as an example?
Yeah. And,
you know, previously, when I used to practice as a dietitian in the NHS, you used to see people who would be having sort of 2 or 3 teaspoons of sugar in their tea. And to me, there's actually benefits of them sort of gradually reducing the amount of sugar in their tea rather than perhaps automatically turning to a sweetener. And by doing so, hopefully they get to the point in time where they can no longer stand at tea when it's had sugar added to it. So that's the ideal scenario you want to achieve. But those small steps can be quite powerful. But of course, we have to accept that everybody's an individual.
It's interesting you say that about the tea. So I used to have sugar. I used to have sugar in my tea, and that's what I did. I just cut down rather than swap to sweetener because I can't bear the taste of sweetener in tea. But now I couldn't have a cup of tea with a sugar in it. It's like the most intense thing. But if you told me that when I had two sugars in my tea before, I'd never have believed it. So I had to take it down like a quarter of a teaspoon at a time.
It's a much better way as well, because it does help to reduce your like of sweetness. So just by making those small steps, you're gradually getting away from the same level of sugar liking that you used to have. So it's that gradual sort of behavioural change, which is just so powerful.
See, one of the things that we get listeners' questions who kind of talk about some of the things they get stuck on. And actually, Kaylee sent us a message talking about sugar cravings. You know, you were just mentioning there about kind of like behaviours and things. And she says that she works nights and she's just wondering, how do you deal with sugar cravings? I take healthy meals and snacks, but I find the next day I'm so tired, I just reach for a quick sugar fix and it turns into a big binge. And I think there's many of us who could hold our hands up, whether we work nights or not, whether maybe it's like, you know, parents with young children, people who are, you know, a bit sleep deprived. When that happens, like, it's like the sugar monster comes out within me and just takes over. It's, you know, what Kaylee's talking about, why do we kind of get these kind of like almost sugar monsters, these cravings, this urge to kind of have sugar? What's that about?
Yeah, bless her. I mean, there's probably two elements. Perhaps she just genuinely is very tired. And, you know, when people are tired, they perhaps turn to foods that they wouldn't normally turn to. There's something really very important about getting enough sleep, but I really recognize it's quite difficult for people who work nights. There's some sort of diurnal sort of variations in terms of hormonal changes, which might contribute to variances in sort of appetite and appetite regulation. And I mean, I heard you say there, Claire, that, you know, Kaylee is obviously making a lot of effort to be really organized in terms of planning what food she takes with her. You know, I guess possibly for Kaylee, recognizing that the day after is also difficult. But again, of course, there is also the SINs within Slimming World's food optimizing plan. So again, that might be a time when she uses some of her SINs.
Mm. So what would you say, Anna, you know, as a consultant, because we've talked about surf the urge and,
yeah.
And I mean, that's away from the science. It's kind of behaviours, isn't it, really? But
I think what I've learned from my journey and seeing members, especially on night shifts, is that when you're tired, when you're quite low, you seek an instant hit of something that's going to pick you up emotionally and physically. And we've learned that sugar does that, haven't we? We've learned, like, whether it's at a subconscious or conscious level, that actually if I have a sugary drink or a caffeine-filled drink, I feel, even if it's not for very long, picked up. But what I had to learn, especially because we've discussed on this podcast, I've had a child that doesn't like very much sleep, so survived on about 4 minutes sleep for the last 4 years, is that actually what was far more beneficial was to be eating things like lots of protein, lots of fruits and vegetables, having, you know, a big bowl of pasta and stuff like that. So I kept full, because what I had to appreciate is that being busy, being tired, I wasn't eating properly. So I would always say to anybody in that situation, are you eating really good meals? Also, when you're wanting to have all the sugar, is it actually that you're hungry? Like, Claire, I remember you saying a lot of the time on your night shifts when you were working in the newsroom, it was because it was there, or because it was to break up the time, or because you were so tired. But actually playing around with your meals was a much more beneficial thing to do. So I always think, for me with sugar, it's happening because of a reason. And normally it's an emotional reason, not a physical one. Because like I always say, and I say to Daisy, if you're hungry, you'll eat an apple. If you just fancy something, you'll eat the chocolate, won't you? So I don't know if it's the same for her, but I would always direct any of my members to really look at the free food and are we harnessing that enough? Because I know I'm not eating well. You're the same probably, Claire, aren't you? You'll pick if you're hungry and you haven't really.
There's always room for dessert. I've got to say that.
I've got a cake and pudding tummy. Like, it's a whole separate place. It's got a whole space for its
own. I mean, yeah. Like, drinks is obviously a big thing here. You kind of touched on that, but alcohol, we can't get around actually by not mentioning alcohol. One of the things I felt in order for me to go on to lose 5 stone, quite early on I made the decision, mostly for mental health reasons, but I chose to leave alcohol behind. I felt like really to get the weight loss I needed and wanted, I kind of had to choose between chocolate and alcohol, and I chose chocolate. That was my first love and it will be my love forever. But I understand, you know, with alcohol, like the sugars that can be involved there too. You know, you talked about tea and coffee, but cider, you know, we just mentioned there how many sugar teaspoons that has. There are lots of people kind of think it's like liquid calories almost, don't they?
I mean, there's no contrast. I mean, before moving on to the alcohol and the drinks, I think obviously what we're all saying in terms of trying to overcome those sort of sugar urges when you're feeling particularly tired is to be as organized and as planned and to try and have sort of healthy meals throughout the day. I mean, that of course is ideal, and yeah, supporting people to sort of find the sort of pragmatic ways of achieving that is wonderful, and obviously support is really powerful, and sharing tips and ideas, so you know that's great. But yes, moving on to the drinks, I mean I must say, in terms of the evidence, I said somewhere earlier that, you know, in terms of the rationale behind some of the guidelines around the recommendations for sugar intake, there is a little bit of controversy and lack of clarity. But with respect to sugar in drinks, it's a much clearer picture in that the evidence does suggest that there is an association between the amount of sugar that's consumed in drinks. So you're typical sugary drinks and actually weight. So people who consume more sugary drinks are more likely to have a higher body weight or levels of body fatness. And of course, in your sugary alcohol drinks, you've got the double whammy. You've got, in terms of weight management, you've both got those sort of rapidly absorbed sugars and also the alcohol contributing to weight gain. And of course, sugary drinks, we don't actually really need for good health.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, Anna, as a consultant, these are things that you talk about in group, aren't they, as well? And actually, I suppose like a lot of members kind of share tips of how they kind of tackle those. For me, it's like the evening. It's like that 9 p.m. I'm sat on the sofa. I'm just about to start watching Married at First Sight UK. Hit play, and then all of a sudden it just comes over me, and you know, sharing ideas with other members, with people who are on the same journey with you, is a big help to kind of tackle this thing that you kind of trip over and form these new habits, right?
Yeah, and I think a really key thing is knowing if that's your time, plan for it. Don't be surprised by every night when it happens. Like, and it's happened for the whole of your life. Know that actually 9 o'clock is the time where you might want to, I don't know, hot chocolate, or you might want to go and have saved some sims for some pudding or do something, because the best successes I see are when people learn what they need to do in their everyday life to make it, you know, consistent change happen. So, you know, if it is swapping the 12 sin chocolate bar to the fruit or meringue nest and some yogurt, it's knowing yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Amanda Avery, and we really appreciate your help.
Yeah, it's been great chatting about sugar. It's perhaps not totally the demon that it's been made out to be, but the key thing to me is about one's overall diet and health. And the good news about programs like Food Optimizing is that everybody's diet is going to be a healthier one as a consequence of making the sort of changes suggested. Because the one reason why sugar is perhaps pure and white and deadly is because it doesn't contain any of the other important nutrients. Most of the free foods have got lots of other nutrients in which are really good for our health. And sadly, sugar just doesn't contain anything else other than sugar. But an interesting chat about sugar.
Yeah, and we would say that for anybody who is listening and wants to read more about sugar, about tackling your craving culprits, these kind of stuff, you can go and find out on some brilliant, really great features on Lifeline Online, which you have access to if you are a member. Go type in some of these words. We'll put a link to it on our episode description too, to a brilliant one if this is a subject that you'd like to learn more about. We hope that you share your thoughts to the slimmingworldpodcast@gmail.com or come to Instagram @slimmingworldpodcast. Bye for now.
Bye.